Welcome to the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Quizmaster Lee Brushnida, and I'm joined here by the ever elusive, ever wonderful...
Can't catch me.
Yeah. Well, this week, Mark Davis. Elusive. Hello. At 4 a.m. I was wanting you at 4 a.m.
Oh, boy.
This week.
Yeah.
Was not planning to bring this up. But we've got a special episode coming up for you if we can work it out, some international trivia.
Indeed.
With previous guest Adam, and just had a scheduling error this week.
So I was under the impression, because of how time zones work, we had talked previously, and I could have swore you said that it would be 4 a.m. Wednesday going into Thursday, which Wednesday I have my trivia. It doesn't matter how late I stay up. I don't have to work the next day. Mm-hmm. And then, much to my surprise...
Yeah.
I wake up Wednesday morning to a series of text messages and Facebook messages basically saying, where the hell are you?
Yeah, yeah.
Whoops.
My alarm went off at 3:30 a.m. and I thought, I'm doing this for the fans. I'm doing this for the listeners. And then I got myself in the I'm woken trivia mind state. I need to play trivia. So I had a cup of coffee. I was sitting here, but you know, not to make you feel bad. Sounds like it was an honest mistake.
Well, yeah.
But,
and also, know. I mean, I would have thought, I guess, with something having at 4 a.m. that maybe there would have been some conversation where you would have been like, hey man, so
I thought that was, when Adam was like, should I pack up the microphone? Like, it's like his day that he's packing up to go, you know, and take it. So it's honest error. Anyways,
gotcha.
Let's just, I'm not trying to harass you about it.
Now we're understood.
Yeah.
Now we're on the same page.
Oh, we're very understood now.
Yes.
You know, I understood that we both enjoyed having Dallas as a guest last week.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
A lot of fun.
He was awesome. Dallas, thanks for coming on the episode last week. I actually made it out to his 90s trivia, music trivia.
How was it? I was going to go, but I had a really, really rough day.
I thought it was okay. So the format of it was identify the song, artist, and year. And he would play tracks. So it was like, this is the track for question number two. This is the track for question number three. I would have preferred if there were more like straight up trivia questions, you know, like what album did this single come off of or something along
gotcha,
those lines.
Gotcha.
It was straight up just like song identification, basically. The hardest and best moment, I think, for me was he asked who sang the hit. Well, he played the song, but it was All For You. You know that song? Hard to say what it is I
oh,
see
yeah, 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 yeah.
in you.
Yep.
Do you remember who that was? Since you couldn't make it out, I'll take this one on the road. Right?
I know it.
Yeah. I thought I knew it, too. But I didn't.
Give me the first letter.
That's going to give it away, I think.
Okay.
But it's a D. Is that what you were expecting? You were expecting an S, weren't you?
No.
For Sister Hazel?
No.
Oh, that's where we landed, was Sister Hazel.
Oh, yeah. I didn't think it was Sister Hazel. Mm. I can't remember.
Delamitri.
Fuck.
Delamitri.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
I was like trying to remember. I was like, was it Delamico?
That answer, like, gnawed at my brain afterwards. You know, it's like, yeah, it was bad. But, yeah, anyways, the whole event, it was pretty fun overall. Like I said, I would have preferred, you know, a couple more trivia questions
gotcha.
In it rather than just song ID, but I did have a good time. We also have to clean up a bit of a mess that he left on our podcast last week. It's a big miscorrection. Let's go. Just go ahead and take care of it early here.
Miscorrection.
Dallas led us astray, but at least he wrote in to tell us. While I was listening, I immediately knew that Mother Goose was not Hans Christian Andersen.
I was so excited.
Me too. This email came in about 10 minutes after the episode was posted, by the way. It was not by a woman, but a man named Thomas Carnan. I was thinking of The Ugly Duckling by Hans Christian Andersen, another avian variety. Though it wasn't a question, it's a bad fact. If I fuck up again, I'm hanging up my trivia hat.
Don't do that, Dallas.
Yes,
it's okay.
Please don't do that. We all make mistakes. But I did do a little digging, on this so that we could make sure that this Mother Goose thing is cleared up. Thomas Carnan is not the only person responsible for this. So Mother Goose is actually an imaginary character with no clear origin. It's believed to have traces to Old Mother Hubbard, which was a stock figure in the 16th century in British popular culture. In the mid-17th century, a French literary review made a comparison to a Mother Goose story. So this shows that it was kind of in the popular zeitgeist, you know, of the day at the time, that Mother Goose was a known entity, even though there wasn't any literature specifically citing this as a character. In the late 17th century, French author Charles Perrault had published an early collection of fairy tales called Tales of My Mother Goose. That's the translation in English. I will not butcher the French here.
Yeah.
30 years later, in the early 18th century, a Brit named Robert Samber published an English translation which introduced the character Sleeping Beauty, Little Red Riding Hood, Puss in Boots, Cinderella, and others from Perrault's fairy tales to the English-speaking audiences for the first time. Mother Goose's nursery rhymes, which is what we in America generally think of when we think of Mother Goose, not the prose stories.
Yep.
Those were published nearly 50 years later in 1784 by Thomas Carnan, who is a book printer, not an author, and a stepson of writer John Newbery, who is believed to actually written the rhymes themselves.
Huh.
Now, clearly, Mother Goose has been many men over the years, but local historians in Boston claim that Mary Goose, who died in 1690, is the original Mother Goose because she was known around town as having a very warm relationship with the children, singing them songs. She was viewed as like a grandmotherly figure, right, basically. But many historians, including notable folklorists Iona and Peter Opie, have denied this due to a lack of evidence.
Yeah, to kind of be like, oh, well, you think it's her because she was friends with kids. That's kind of...
Right, when all this other stuff is going on in England.
Yeah, right.
But so if you're ever in Boston taking a tour and somebody says that, you might have to give them a little missed correction right there. Yeah.
This is going to be weird, but...
Yeah.
Missed correction, you're wrong.
You're wrong. Wrong. Yeah, so that is the succinct... clear story of Mother Goose. No real origin, but you know, a bunch of writers, authors, booksellers over the years have dipped their toes in, including L. Frank Baum, the author of The Wizard of Oz.
Mm-hmm.
He even wrote a book, Mother and Father Goose. At least he tried to get show his masculine identity a little bit and not hide the veneer of like, I'm a kindly old woman, Mother Goose, named Thomas Carden. Bookseller, book printer, buy my Mother Goose books,
please.
Yeah. One last miscorrection we have too. Fletcher writes in, the Legend of Zelda song frequently attributed to System of a Down is from a band called The Rabbit Joint. And I remember reading up a little bit about this. The singer writer of this did not mind the comparison to System of a Down, so that's good.
Yeah,
you know, no jealousy there. So
no.
All right. That's the miscorrection from last week. Again, thanks, Dallas, for coming on. We really enjoyed your episodes. And, you know, even if it was a flub on this Mother Goose thing, at least we got to, like, you know, dig into it and see what's what. So if you have any miscorrections, feel free to write in. nononsensetrivia@gmail.com if you hear anything out of sorts on the podcast.
Something here is amiss. Yeah.
All right. Let's go ahead and get into our weekly wrap up right now.
Oh, yeah.
Play it in, Sam. The Moist Men are on a win streak. Last Thursday at number 3 Craft Brews and Beer Bar, the Moist Men replaced a high score record set just a week previously at the venue by Wish You Were Beer. The Moist Men earning 114 points last week at number 3, a new high record there. So they now have the high score record at number 3 Craft Brews and Beer Bar in Cape Coral, as well as the highest all-time score at any No Nonsense Trivia Challenge at Bury Me Brewing Company, when they were awarded 134 points for their near-perfect performance at our horror movie trivia event there last October. So Three Pepper is the only venue, No Nonsense Trivia venue, that they do not have the high score at currently. This week at Three Pepper Burrito Company on Monday night, they narrowly beat out the Wet Boys for another victory. Not the high score, but they did win. Shout out also to our newest team, Super Awesome Friends Forever, who came in last place. That's Tommy's team, by the way.
Uh-huh.
Selecting cryptozoology as the final category for this week's final no-nonsense question.
I've been meaning to ask you that.
Yeah. What?
What the last... the
Oh, it's cryptozoology. Finally, over at Bury Me Brewing, her jocks with locks beat out returning champs the Hideaways in a tiebreaker question with 48 points. Each team had 48 points at the end, and it came down to a tiebreaker. So how did your teams do over at Nice Guys, Mark?
They did well. Jamie's team name this week, Sex Toy Story 4, Andy's Coming.
Nice.
Tied for the first round and won a tiebreaker. Won the second round, but could not hold on through my last question.
That seems to be the trend for them lately.
Yeah, it's been it's been a little, I wouldn't call it a skid. I mean, they're still winning stuff.
Yeah.
But the winning team was the team in last place.
Who, well, isn't it ironic?
We had someone, we had kind of a situation like you have where we had some transient people that are here for work. So they don't usually stick around. But we talked for a while. They loved my trivia, which was great. And they're going to be hopefully coming back next week. So
cool.
They might be listening to this. So if they
maybe
are,
they'll take jobs here, permanent jobs. And then would, they'll be your that would be challengers.
Awesome. That would be amazing.
We can dream.
We can dream. Dare to dream.
Well, that sounds good. Congratulations to In Last Place for coming in first place at Nice Guys Trivia with Mark Davis on Wednesday. If you missed it, if you missed any of our live trivia,
how dare you?
You can visit us and play. It's free to play, our events. Three Pepper Burrito Company for our regular Monday night trivia on March 4th. I'll be at Bury Me Brewing Company in Fort Myers on March 6th. After that, we'll swing over to Nice Guys Pizza and enjoy some trivia courtesy of my co-host here, Mark Davis. That starts at 9:30, right?
Or yeah, 9 o'clock.
9 o'clock.
9 to 10:30.
How did I miss that?
I don't know.
It's been years. I've been going for years. Number three, Craft Brews and Beer Bar will host No Nonsense Trivia Challenge on March 7th.
Ooh.
So check that out. For more information about all of our live events, you can visit us online at nononsensetrivia.com. All of the No Nonsense events are free to play, and you can win prizes after every round. Join us.
Won't you?
All right, we're going to take a short break now, and we're going to get into some trivia in round one. Before we get into our first round, we want to thank our Patreon supporters for helping us with the show. Thanks to our team captains, Kristen and Fletcher. Thanks to Quizmaster Josh from Bainbury, Tennessee, and our other proverbial lightkeepers, Moist Max, Moist Lucas, Sean, Sherry, Gil. Thank you, guys. We also have a couple of new proverbial lightkeepers. Let's welcome two more Ks. We've got Christopher from Medford, Oregon, and Carly from Southampton, Pennsylvania. Big thanks also to our tiny league of Rumpelstiltskins, the Mikeys, Mikey J and Mikey C.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mikeys. We also have a message from our first ever Quiz Daddy. That is our top supporting tier. Big thanks and welcome to Tim from San Diego. Thank you, Tim.
Thank you, Tim. Very much.
Tim wrote us a little note here. Hey, guys. Super excited to be able to support your show. I teach at a local high school in San Diego. So we put together a group of coworkers coupled with some friends and family to create a trivia team. We've quickly become the hated team at that location because of how much we win. But we have a great host and he has fun with it and makes the time there even more enjoyable. You hear that, Quizmasters? Your role makes a big difference in your event's regular attendance.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know a little something about being a hated winning team with the Wet Boys. I think you guys have won the top 7 out of 10 games at Three Pepper, except for maybe number 3. Like, the third highest score there went to the Moist Men.
Yeah.
But you guys are regular winners there. Do you ever feel the heat?
I feel bad sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I try not to be gloaty about it. You know, I try to just go in there and put my head down and just play and hope for the best. But, I mean, it's a group effort.
So you feel like a guilty winner sometimes?
Sometimes, yeah. It's like, it's 'cause you don't want other people to start being, you know, people that are playing because they're competitive. You don't want them to be like, well, if I can't compete here, then why even bother coming?
Right.
You know, I come here to drop $20 to win $35.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm not going to win that money, then, you know, I'm not really interested. So You don't want to feel like you're, you know, making it unfun.
I mean, I don't know how that feels. Usually when I win trivia, I'm like, God damn it, I earned this time. I earned it, you know. Anyways, let's get back to the note here. Their team name is Pat's Garden Service, and is an homage to, quote, my dad who has his own gardening business. Long story short, we had some clever team names in the beginning that were a little less than appropriate. Some of the ladies on our team felt uncomfortable, so they changed it. And of the name Pat's Garden Service, Tim writes, now people usually make up team names as they play on ours just to fuck with us, but that makes it even better. Again, thanks so much for the podcast.
And thanks to those women for speaking up and for everybody on that team being receptive to that.
Yeah,
instead absolutely. Of just feeling uncomfortable and not saying anything about it. It's awesome. That I think it's that kind of communication, that kind of comunicato inside a team that probably helps make them a winning team. And people not sitting there being like, well, I feel like this is it, but I don't want to open my mouth. You know right. what I mean?
Yep. Thanks so much for your support, Tim. Thank you to all our patrons, new and old. If you'd like to support the podcast and get access to bonus content for this podcast, go to thenono.com and click support at the top. It'll bring you right to our Patreon page. Get that bonus content.
Boom.
All right. Let's get into our first round questions. Mark, do you want to go ahead and take the first one here?
Can I tell you something?
Yeah.
I'd love to do that. Here is your first question. Fashion icon Karl Lagerfeld passed away recently and is best known as the creative director for what company from 1983 until his death?
I know this. One of my friends in college actually had... And this was so out of character for her personality. So it was very strange, but she had an Apple logo on the back of one of her arms on her tricep. Jeez. And then on the other arm, she had a Chanel logo. The answer being Chanel, correct?
That is correct.
Yeah. Like I said, really out of character, but you know, how well do you really know someone?
That tells you a lot. I feel like that's the kind of thing where you don't see either of those tattoos while you're like going on dates and then you start like rounding second base and the shirt comes off and you see those logos and you just go, oh, I fucked up.
Oh, what if, interesting.
What have I done?
Yeah. All right. My first question for you is a television question.
Okay.
What children's television show about a kids only rock group ran from 1984 to 1993 and featured cast members such as a young Mario Lopez and a young Jennifer Love Hewitt?
Mario Lopez played AC Slater, but this is before.
This is before Saved by the Bell, mm-hmm. where he famously took on that role.
Kids only rock group.
Yeah. I really thought you were going to get this right away.
No idea.
This is your era of kids television, basically, right?
It is.
84, 93.
Mm-hmm. Right in my wheelhouse, baby.
A young Mark Davis selling the space pen.
Yep. Millions of cool headshots and rat tail.
Yeah. Cause you wanted to be a child actor.
Rat tail in tow. I wanted to do something. I didn't know what.
You would have been perfect on this show.
I know
this.
Can you imagine me with little drumsticks in my back pocket?
Yep.
My gray pants. I don't know. I don't even know what to guess. I don't know.
Nothing. Big fat nothing burger for this one, huh?
I think so.
The answer, if you might remember, was a show called Kids Incorporated.
Oh!
I vaguely remember watching this when I was like in preschool. Like they had tapes they would put in. Like, watch this. And it was like, Kids Incorporated. Or something like that.
What was that? On like 3 or 4 o'clock?
Something like that, I'm sure. Yeah,
to get out of school.
Prime, yeah, prime
pop
after
down on
time.
The couch with your Go-Gurt didn't exist at the time.
I had no idea that there was a Lopez-Hewitt connection until I came across this factoid. Did you?
No.
Yeah.
No clue.
Learn something new every day.
There you are. That's the point of this, isn't it?
Yeah.
Edutainment.
This right. thing we call edutainment.
Here's your second question. See, I got so many questions for you. Bombay Duck... or bummelo is what kind of animal?
A Bombay duck.
Or a bummelo.
So Bombay is a city in India, which I could not recall the last time you asked me to name any city in India.
That was a tough one.
But now I know that Calcutta and Bombay, at the very least off the top of my head, I can pull those now. So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
A Bombay duck. Or a... bummelo?
Mm-hmm.
Sounds kind of like buffalo. But there's an M. So I'm thinking like it could be like a goose or maybe it's something like a platypus or something like that. I'm trying to, I don't know where the platypus originates though. Is that, they have platypi in platypussies? What's the platypi plural is there?
Probably, well,
I know octopuses is the plural.
Octopi.
No. Octopi is not a real word.
Oh, it isn't?
Nope. It's a common mistake. Fuck. Octopuses is the plural. Pulaxi or something is like a Latin plural if you want to get technical, but octopi is definitely wrong.
That's fine.
Don't quote me on that Latin one, but there's a formal version of the plural of that. Anyways, goose, platypus,
Haley.
It's not going to be a duck. Yeah.
Coctopus.
That's a good team name right there. I like it. It's chickens, of course. I'm going to go, it's got to be something that's like close to a duck, I think. Some kind of bird that's not a duck. So I'm going to go with goose.
The correct answer is it is a fish.
Oh, really?
It is a fish.
The bumblebee.
Ugly fish.
Is that the one that's like pink and lives at like crazy depths?
No, I don't think so. It's green. It's got a big underbite and big old eyes.
Okay.
And what they do apparently is I think they dry them out and they make a powder out of them. And that's for the meal Bombay duck. That is the...
So it's served on duck?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, the nickname of the fish is Bombay duck.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, there's another ugly fish that's like this like lumpy fish, blobfish, I think is what it's called. And it's hideous looking, you know, when you see a picture of it.
Does it look like
human,
a blob?
Yeah, it looks like a human got transformed into a fish. Ugh. like in The Fly or something, like, you know, mixed genetics or something. But the reason that they look blobby, they actually have a natural normal fish like form, but they live at such a low or high pressure underwater
that it squishes them.
When they get pulled up into our pressure system, they just go
I'm just beautiful.
Yeah. So
kill me.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, you know, it's not that the fish is ugly. It's that the way that we treat them turns them into a physical manifestation of our own ugliness.
What a shock.
Here's the second question for you. This is primarily a music question, but it will pull on your movies and sports knowledge as well.
Pull on my heartstrings, too.
Prominently featured in the 1983 film The Big Chill, starring the Boobox Pirate from Hook, Glenn Close. What number one hit song from 1971 is played by the Denver Broncos after every home victory? What 1971 song is played by the Denver Broncos after every home victory? It was Billboard magazine rated it the song of the year in 1971. Number one hit. And I believe they give that distinction to whichever song is number one for the longest in the year.
Damn. 1971 hit, heavily featured in The Big Chill.
Mm-hmm.
This is a great question.
Thank you.
Rocky Mountain High. I have no idea.
I'll give you one more hint to try and get. That's not it. But I'll give you.
Good. I'm going to give you another hint.
One more
right.
hint, just in case. This also inspired singer-songwriter Daniel Johnston's iconic "Hi, How Are You, Frog?" You might be familiar if you've ever been to Austin, Texas, to see this mural.
I've been there.
See this mural that Daniel Johnston made. First, I think put it on a tape cover or a T-shirt, if I remember correctly.
It was on a T-shirt. That's what got him really big. Was Kurt Cobain wearing his "Hi, How Are You" shirt?
Right. That's right. That's right.
But
what song is played by the Denver Broncos after every home victory?
8 Miles. I have no idea.
The band is Three Dog Night.
Jeremiah Was a Bullfrog?
Also known as Joy to the World.
Joy to the World.
Is the every proper song title. Yep. Yep.
Oh, see, as soon as you said Three Dog Night, I knew then. Mm-hmm. It was then that I knew.
Yeah, they play it. It's been, you know, televised. I think they won a Super Bowl in 73, maybe. And one of the players was like singing along to it, you know, and it was like, oh my gosh, you know, the song just came out a couple of years ago. Everybody loves it. Joy to the World by Three Dog Night.
All right. Here's your third question. Mm-hmm. What word describes the enlargement of bone or tissue at the joint between the big toe and the foot?
Whoa, that was that got specific at the end. What word?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The joint bone, and they get big in the toe?
It describes the enlargement of bone or tissue at the joint between the big toe and the foot.
It has a name?
Yeah.
Huh. Okay. It's the enlargement of the bone or tissue in the big toe. You said in the big toe.
Between the big toe and the foot.
So it's that one very specific spot on both of your feet.
Yep.
Not on any other toes, just the big toe.
That's what it says.
I'm just thinking of all the possibilities. Is it a knob? Is it a knuckle? Is it a foot knuckle? Is it... what could it be? A big toe joint. A...
That's like a big toe released movie. This is a big toe joint.
I'm gonna say it's a toe knuckle.
Toe knuckle?
Yeah.
It's a good guess. The correct answer is bunion.
That's the bunion?
That's the bunion.
I thought a bunion was like something you have removed.
Nope.
So that the knuckle of your big toe
to
your foot is a bunion?
Yeah, the enlargement of the bone or tissue, yep.
Every time I hear the word bunion, I get like a savory hunger because I want onions.
Okay.
I hate that it's called bunion.
Well, because
it sounds like onion.
Whenever I'd hear bunions, I remember also hearing people talk about corns, mm-hmm. another foot thing.
Why?
So I always thought they were the same thing. I remember being young and seeing commercials for these special Dr. Scholl's whatever mm-hmm. to curb corns and bunions, so now you think of corn and onion.
Right.
And maybe you're doubly hungry now.
Sucks.
This is bullshit.
Put that person in a grape stepping tub and let's get some new wine flavors going.
Please.
That's disgusting. Here, I'm going to throw a question terrible. At you. Here is, I know you hate these, but
here we are.
I tried to offer a hint.
Okay.
For you to work it out here. Which American poet was mentor to fellow transcendentalist writer Henry David Thoreau and was known as the Sage of Concord and shares part of their name with a famous missing figure? Which American poet was mentor to fellow transcendentalist writer Henry David Thoreau, was known as the Sage of Concord and shares part of their name with a famous missing character?
Okay. I already thought I knew it because I've always heard the two of they've always mix and matched in my brain to me. And I don't know. Maybe I didn't know why that is, but now I do because they were connected like that.
They were bunioning around.
Yeah. Whenever I think of people just chilling in cabins and shit,
mm-hmm.
I think of Henry David Thoreau. And I just blanked on the other person's name. Hold
That's
on.
The answer, Mark. That's what I'm looking for.
Is it?
No. The
oh no, I know, on. I know. Yeah. Ralph Waldo Emerson.
Yes, that's right.
Of Emerson, Lake and Palmer,
or of Where's Waldo?
Or Where's Waldo?
All right. Well, that was three for me and three from you, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, we're gonna take another break, and we'll be back in round two with a rate my question. We're about to hit it at rate my question. And we were just looking at some Ray Romano trivia.
Jesus Christ.
We were talking about knowing how there's no good reason to know Ray Romano's kids' names. Only
no
bad
good reasons.
Reasons.
Only bad reasons.
Yet we know him as Matthew and Gregory.
And
Alexandra. Uh-huh.
And Joseph, of course.
Of course. Alexandra, Joseph, Matthew, Gregory.
Come on, guys. Come on. Get in the car.
Yeah. We got to go beat up these quiz masters that keep talking about you. All right. Let's do a rate my question.
Rate my question.
Ray Romano.
I started weak, so I ended strong.
Yeah. That's good. I like it. We've got two rate my questions this week, actually. Two questions coming at you.
Bring them to
let's
me.
Go one right after the other. First comes from our guest last week, Dallas, Quizmaster Dallas, who asks, what type of disaster was the catalyst in which the survivors escaped their initial death in Final Destination 2?
I don't think I've seen any Final Destination movies.
Oh, really?
I don't like scary movies.
Mm-hmm. I do remember seeing this this movie. And I do remember the answer, because if you've seen it, it's quite hard to forget. It's pretty brutal. It's a mass casualty car accident, is the answer.
Okay. Yeah.
What do you think of that question?
I think it's a great question.
Yeah. I think it's a decent question. If you've seen the movie, like I said, it's hard to forget the scene. If you or your team are unfamiliar with the movie, there's at least the hint that it's a disaster, so you can take an educated guess. I think that's an important. Our next rate my question is from Gil. Another proverbial lightkeeper of ours.
Absolutely.
What modern chain of restaurants is credited with opening the first drinking establishment for singles on New York City's Upper East Side in 1965?
Ooh.
A modern restaurant chain credited with establishing the first drinking establishment for singles in New York City's Upper East Side, 1965.
What a great question that is.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if he wrote that.
It came with an accompanying article, so I think he just stumbled. He was reading.
Okay.
And
do you know the answer?
Well, when I open the emails, if the answer is there, I see instantly. I actually saw the answer before I even read the question on this one. Yeah, so it was spoiled for me.
But there's still hope for me.
Yeah.
What restaurant chain?
Mm-hmm. Start off as a bar for singles in New York's Upper East Side. 1965.
I'm going to guess Denny's. That's kind of weird, but they kind of have that, like, hey, you know, like vibe. Like it would be a good place for singles.
I would say Denny's hey vibe is like an 8, and this place's hey vibe is like an 11. Turn it up.
TGI Fridays.
Yes.
Really?
TGI Fridays. That's
right. Yeah, that is turn up to 11. Mm-hmm. Okay.
According to the article that Gil attached to this, it was known around town as the Stew Zoo. Due to the amount of stewardesses that would frequent the establishment.
Hell yeah.
And it inspired copycats called fern bars in the 60s and 70s all across America, because it was decorated with plants and kitschy artifacts. Yeah, I like this question a lot, because it seems highly guessable, you know,
mm-hmm.
like when it's a modern restaurant chain, you know, and I feel like players that even if they get this wrong, they'd find it interesting.
Absolutely.
You know,
yeah, that's a great question.
Yeah. The opportunity to make an educated guess is like really valuable to a question if you're writing it.
Yeah.
It can't be too obvious, but it's not like multiple choice trivia either, which I kind of hate. I feel like if you can introduce a category into the question, like modern restaurant chain, it helps prevent any discouraging thoughts like, well, how the hell would I have known that? You know, it's
right.
Like it gives you a fighting chance. So, yeah, it's got that fun fact quality, like I mentioned. You know, you can drop it in conversation and stuff.
Speaking of guessability, mm-hmm. Have you been watching The Masked Singer?
I have not. I just recently heard about it for the first time.
It's really, really good.
Yeah.
It's really,
I know a
really
couple of our friends were on a recent local news show. Kyle actually was on it. I think she said she performed on a local Fox. They were asking local musicians about the performance. Caleb Neff,
oh, okay.
Claire from the Free Coasters, your cohort,
mm-hmm.
if you will.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting because they don't, you know, they keep the lid on really tight on to who these people are, but they give you clues. So it's like trivia. They give you like little bits and pieces of like, you know, the stuff they say, they'll be like, it's been a hard road, but well, you know, or like whatever, like something to kind of give off, the, you know, who they may be.
Yeah.
But last night was the finale, and it was really, really good. I watched.
So
it
they revealed who the singer or multiple singers were.
All of them. So you get voted, the person with the lowest votes each week ends up getting unmasked, and you find out who they are.
Mm.
And then last night was the finale with the top three people.
Ah.
And it was basically third, second, and first place by votes.
Gotcha. So. Are they notable people or are
yes.
they unknowns? Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, we won't spoil it in case you didn't watch.
No, I am not. Yeah,
in case you didn't watch. But if you have a Rate My Question, feel free to write in. We love them. We love getting them. NoNonsenseTrivia@gmail.com, if you will.
You kind of have a Bono look today.
From you too?
Yeah.
I don't understand how. I'm wearing sweat shorts and a tank top.
Ray's first book was titled Everything and a Blank.
Matthew and Gregory, Joshua Alexandra.
It's beautiful. I don't know. I can't find the answer.
Everything and a what?
I can't find the answer. Oh, I have to submit them. He has a book called Everything and a, and I thought I'd be able to get you the answer right away, but it doesn't
everything
work that way.
Everything and a hit TV show.
You get a little
I
Kermit.
Got everything and a hit TV show. Don't fuck with me.
Alexandra, Matthew, Gregory, Joseph, let's go get some ice cream.
This is my house, my rules, guys.
All right, let's get into our questions here.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm going to go first this time. Here's another music question for you. I know this is in your wheelhouse. I think you'll get it. What 1968 Whistle Along song was the first ever posthumously released number one single in U.S. chart history?
What do people fucking whistle along to?
That's the question.
I'm going to say Lollipop.
Can you sing that for me?
Lollipop, lollipop, oh, lolly, 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 lollipop.
Does that have whistling in it?
No, but I was thinking whistle along. I did. Oh, I guess it's a song with whistling in it, huh?
Yeah, you want to whistle along this one. There are no lyrics, just whistles. Well, there are some lyrics, but prominent whistles featured.
1961. 68. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's so weird. I whistle so much that it's hard for me to think of a song that is... It's hard for me to differentiate between a song that has a lot of whistling in it or ones I just whistle like that, I feel, is one that I whistle to.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I don't know why I'm coming up so blank. I don't know.
All right. You're just leaving it blank, huh? I guess you're right, Lollipop.
Yeah.
The answer is Sittin' on the Dock of the Bay by Otis Redding.
Okay.
I don't forgot know all about
it. See, I was thinking it was like the main part, but yeah.
Well, interestingly enough,
I was just fighting myself.
So I'll give you some production insight into that song. Originally, that whistle part was supposed to go at the beginning of the song, but a bunch of producers and record heads were like, no, get rid of the whistling. Like, that is not a good part of the song.
Listen, we'll let you whistle later.
Yeah. You whistle later in the song. Well, he had just taken it out. He was like, all right, fine, I'll take the whistling out. But according to guitarist Steve Cropper in an interview with Fresh Air's Terry Gross, Redding was originally going to do a rap for the ending fade out, but forgot the words and started whistling the beginning instead. The seagulls and the waves that are in the track were added to the mix after Redding's tragic death based on his suggestion before he had died. He said,
damn,
we should put some seagulls and waves in there. And so they honored him with that.
Damn, that's intense.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that is the first posthumously released number one single in U.S. chart history. Otis Redding, Sittin' on the Dock of the Bay.
By the way, that Ray Romano book is called Everything in a Kite.
Boring.
All right, here's your first question of the second round. What actress appeared in Kate and Leopold, The Doors, Prelude to a Kiss, and most recently Ithaca?
Kate and Leopold, Ithaca, most recently Prelude to a Kiss. Unfamiliar with that entirely. What was the other one?
The Doors. About the hit rock band.
Yeah.
The Doors.
Ugh. Dark Place. I'm entering it.
There he is. Okay. There's lights swishing by you. You feel your skin shake. Your joints expanding and then retracting. Blood coming just out of your pores and going back in.
I feel like her name starts with an M or a K. Is that correct?
Yes.
So I'm going with either Meg Ryan or Kathleen. What is her last name? Is that it? Is it Kathleen something? Is that right? Because I think both of them were in The Doors. Oliver Stone's The Doors, profiling Jim Morrison. Mm-hmm. I have a framed letter from Patricia Morrison to my mother hanging on my wall. And Patricia Morrison name drops this actress. Kathleen? I guess I'm going to go with Meg Ryan. I can't pull this other name right now. And I'm sorry, Mom.
You sure?
I'm sorry, Patricia. I'm sorry, Jim. Why? You know how there's just things that you know, and then they just slip out at the most crucial moments? That's right now. That's me.
That's this.
Tell me the answer, please. Kathleen. A, B, C, D, E, F, G. No, I can't. I can't pull it. If you were on my team, though, maybe we could get this. If I had a team, I feel like...
The correct answer is... Meg Ryan.
Is it?
It is.
That was my final answer, though.
Yeah.
That is, okay. Whew. I'm glad you accepted that. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Oh, man.
Megan Ryan.
Whew. I needed a drink of water after that
one. You were struggling over there. Yep. This break can't come soon enough for you.
I'm glad... I'm sad I wasted all that effort. Fuck whoever that other person was. I'm glad I got Meg Ryan. I'm standing by you, Meg. And I like that you picked not, like, you know, Sleepless in Seattle when Harry met Sally. Was my thing. Way too obvious.
Yeah.
All right. Question number two for you. It's a geography question.
Yeah.
Located in the Mariana Trench, what is the name of the deepest part of Earth's seabed called? First discovered by Jacques Picard and Don Walsh in 1960. What is the name of the deepest point of the Earth's seabed?
I know this. But I don't know this. Ask that to me one more time. The lowest point of Mariana's Trench.
You got it. That's what I need now.
I'm going to say Death's Canyon. Mm. It's something like that, I think.
I mean, you kind of got the flavor of it, but it's not it.
I know.
Challenger Deep. Challenger Deep. So you could remember that maybe the Challenger space shuttle. Maybe. And Picard also. Jacques Picard. That's got to be Jean-Luc Picard connection somewhere, right?
Hopefully.
They had to be inspired by that, I would think. But yeah, Challenger Deep is between 10,898 to 10,916 meters. That's slightly shy of 7 miles, measured by submersibles. And the higher side is by sonar. So it's... deepest part of the ocean right there.
Dude, that's so insane. Mm-hmm. Isn't there some fact that there's more underwater that we haven't gone through and experienced than there is space?
I mean, not by volume, I don't think, but I've heard something along those lines. It's definitely more than we've explored. There's just more of it than there is land on Earth. So maybe that's the comparison.
Maybe.
You know? Or we know less about it. Might be it. I'm not sure what the exact. If you know, write us. nononsensetrivia@gmail.com. Please let us know.
All right. Here's your next question. Mm-hmm. Blibber Blubber was the name given to the first what?
Blibber Bubber. Blubber.
Blibber Blubber.
Blibber Blubber.
Blibber Blubber.
Blibber
Blubber. Blibber
Blubber. Blibber Blubber.
Blibber Blubber.
Blibber Blubber. First whaling ship. I'm thinking Blubber, obviously. The fat of a whale. Blubber. That's what it's called, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's weird when you hear words isolated like that and you're like, wait, what?
Huh?
Is that a real word? Blubber? Name of the first one. This is so broad. You did not give me a good category here to isolate my answers down. I'll go with Whaling Ship. I don't know. It wouldn't be on that on the nose. And it would be named something more badass, I think, like Whale Killer. Whale Seeker.
It is not Whaling Ship.
Yeah. Blibber Blubber. The first. Silly Putty. That's what I'm going with.
Is that your final answer?
Yeah.
The correct answer is chewing gum.
Oh, okay. All right. I feel like I was kind of on the right track.
You got there.
You know, with the Silly Putty thing. That's closer than... that's going right in Mark's mouth right there. Everything you just
heard. Help me.
All right. I got a third question for you here. This is a food language question. Food etymology, language, if you will.
Okay.
The Nahuatl word for testicle, Nahuatl spoken by the Aztecs, inspired the modern name of what fruit?
Testicle.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say I know this. So something in Mexico, right? Aztecs? Okay. South America, Central America, maybe.
Mesoamerican.
Testicle. You said it's a fruit?
Yes.
What the fuck down there look like nuts?
That's a good question, Mark.
What they got down there that look like nuts? Man, this is tough.
Don't you like knowing, though, that you can go to the store right now, though, and buy something that's roughly translates to testicle?
I know this, and I just can't think of it. I'm gonna say avocado.
That's right.
Yes.
Avocado is the origin of avocado from the Nahuatl.
Man, it looks like an alligator. Yep. Nuts.
All right, we're gonna take a short little break, and then we'll be back in our final round with our final questions.
Already.
And some best worst answers.
Ooh.
All right, let's do some best worst answers.
Best worst answers.
All right, Mark, you got one?
Yeah, so one of my questions last night was, how many players are in a standard polo match? On a standard polo team.
Yeah.
Do you know the answer?
My guess is, let's say what I know of bike polo. To be representative of actual polo, I'll go with four, but maybe it's a bigger field, so they have more, but four is my guess.
It's funny you say that, because in bike polo, it's three.
Oh, it is?
But polo is four.
Oh, it is three, you're right.
So you fucked up, but you got it right. But someone put 11?
Like soccer?
Which would mean, or like football.
Yeah.
Which means you'd have 22 horses just running around. I was like, there'd be horses sucking each other's dicks, and that idea was really funny to me.
It sounds like a big battle, like Game of Thrones style.
Exactly. You know? It's like 11. Do you know what you're saying?
And spears. They have spears as well.
Yeah, that's
funny.
That's the defense.
That is a good wrong answer. I asked last night, what is the name of the fifth largest African nation, which shares a name with the lead singer of the rock band Nickelback? Which is a bit of a meme-y, jokey question, you know, if you're familiar with Nickelback. Some were not familiar with the singer's name of Nickelback. The correct answer is Chad.
Mm-hmm.
The Hideaways wrote down Kenya.
Okay.
And Petunia's Panties wrote down Zambia. Lead singer of Nickelback's name is Zambia.
Zambia Kroger.
Yeah. And their name, by the way, I was like, Petunia from Pete and Pete? And they're like, what? And I was like, from Pete and Pete? And they're like, what's that? And I was like, oh, okay, this is just a weird, creepy name.
Never mind.
Yeah, maybe they can explain it to me next week. What professional athlete was nicknamed the mailman? You know this, right?
Carl Malone.
The Moist
Even Fletcher knew that.
The Moist Men wrote, Newman. The mailman? Seinfeld character? Actors Jack Lemmon and Walter Matthau presented the Best Original Screenplay Award at the Academy Awards in 1997 to what other duo? It is not, as the team answers suggested, Bruce Willis and Danny Glover. Actors who starred in one movie together, as far as I can tell, which was 2010's I'm Still Here, the Joaquin Phoenix documentary. So I don't know if they meant Mel Gibson and Danny Glover from Lethal Weapon or something like that. But Her Jocks with Locks submitted Chris Tucker and Jackie Chan as an answer, which is a nice try, but Rush Hour did not come out until 1998. And it was written by Jim Koof and Ross LaManna. The answer is...
Oh, you put me on the spot.
I'm putting you on the spot.
It was Ben Affleck and Matt Damon.
That's right.
Matt Damon.
For Good Will Hunting.
Yes.
1997.
How do you like those apples?
Right. Many teams did not like those apples.
But apparently a lot of people not liking those apples.
Some other funny things that happened this week. I liked Drew's strategy. This isn't even so much as a joke, but Drew's strategy at Three Pepper when it came to naming which anime each protagonist is from on a bonus question sheet that I gave out. He just listed Avatar, Pokemon, and Dragon Ball multiple times and assigned them randomly to each name. He got one out of six right, which was the obvious one anyway, Goku. But the lesson here, I think, is believe in yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, just he knew he didn't know, and he was like, you know what? I know these three animes. So I'm just going to write them down and bound to get one right. And for the name of that anime bonus sheet, Seth wrote simply across the whole page, the death of the righteous man is beset on all sides by the iniquities of the selfish and the tyrannies of evil men, and I will strike down with great vengeance and furious anger all of those who attempt to poison and destroy my brothers, and you will know my name is the Lord when I lay my vengeance upon thee!
No. Boom, 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 boom.
Right. From Pulp Fiction.
Absolutely.
And the Bible.
From
Pulp Fiction and the Bible.
Slash the Bible.
Yeah. You know, Seth likes to act like he doesn't watch anime, but he got the final question last week about Naruto correct, and this week he got the question about One Piece correct, so I'm pretty sure he's a closet weeb.
Probably
basically.
Is.
Basically. We need to have him back on the podcast soon.
I believe that is
it's due time
an accurate statement.
To have Seth back. So yeah, those are our best worst answers. Thanks to everybody who wrote some funny answers this week and gave us a good chuckle at their expense. Thanks, guys.
Whether it was on purpose or not.
Yep. All right. So it's time for our final questions. Would you like to... Is it your turn to go first or is it mine? I think it's yours, right?
I think it is mine.
Yeah, yeah.
So here is my final question, not from this past week, but from the week before. And we talked a little bit about it last time, so I don't know if you've studied up since.
We'll see.
Who sang the title theme of the James Bond film, A View to a Kill? He sips slowly his coffee and sets it upon the nightstand.
A View to Kill.
A View to a Kill.
A View to a Kill?
Yes.
A View to a Kill? Are you sure?
A View to a Kill.
That does not sound right to me.
A View to... Yeah, to a Kill.
Wow.
1985.
Well, definitely not going to get this question right. I don't even know the name of the movie. Don't recognize that poster either. Did we talk about the answer? We didn't talk about the answer to this on the podcast.
No.
Okay.
No.
Huh. Because my instinct is to go with Tina Turner, but I thought we mentioned that on the podcast. But maybe it's not Tina Turner. I believe it is a lady singer. As was fashionable in the James Bond films of the day, have a lady singer.
James Bond in 1985 must have been, like, perfect. Like, that's just so 1985 guy vibe.
Yep.
I mean,
it's
I know
just the right temperature.
Just, yeah, it's just, like, sleazy enough and, you know, like, oh, yeah. Shit, it's exciting. And, like, it's easy to imagine James Bond doing coke.
Did he do that in the movie?
I don't know, but he probably was assumed.
That's one series
he seems like he'd do coke.
I don't feel like I've given that series its just due, basically.
I can't get myself too interested.
Yeah. Character created by Ian Fleming.
Yep.
In Jamaica at the same desk that Sting wrote I'll Be Watching You At. I remember that about James Bond. And 85, so like I'm thinking like 80s musicians. Madonna, I don't think, had a James Bond theme until Die Another Day. later on. I'm going to stick with Tina Turner on this. I don't know why. I just feel like that's right.
The correct answer is Duran Duran.
I feel like you did. I feel like you mentioned this either on the podcast or afterwards. It sounds familiar. Or maybe I did look it up afterward. I don't know.
Yeah. We have a bone to pick.
Yeah.
You did my team dirty, I heard.
Well, that's up for debate, okay. I think. So just to clarify what happened at Three Pepper this
week. Let me
hear
your side, because I heard their side.
At Three Pepper this week, the score was very close at the end of the night. It was a matter of less than 5 points. And a question that I asked that was worth, I think it was worth five, was what solo artist has more number one, and I'm going to say it correctly here, albums than any other solo artist in musical history, breaking records established by Bruce Springsteen and Elvis Presley, who have 11 and 10 respectively. Now, the first time they read this on Monday night, I believe I said records.
You did.
I believe I said records. And on repeating it in that same, you know, as I usually do, I read the questions a couple times. I made note of that in my head because record is usually referring to a song, mm-hmm. not a collection.
Right.
Even though, and this is where I picked up this bad habit, LPs were called records, mm-hmm. you know, back in the day, regardless of whether or not they were one song or an album. So that's why I said record in the first place. But I believe I caught myself, and my defense for this is that there were teams that got the answer right, you know?
Right.
So I asked around other teams, did you hear me say album? And other than the winning team, nobody could remember if I said album or not. Many teams heard me say record. Some teams thought I was talking about an album when I said record. So what I ended up doing was just calling it, you know, as it was. These are the correct answers, and these were not. But I understand the Wet Boys wrote down Mariah Carey. I remember that. And she mm-hmm. does hold the number one solo artist for hit songs, or so I was told. I have not, looked this up again.
It is true.
But
see, so my problem is when you repeated it and used different language, I believe that. Did you use different language knowing that there would be a difference? Or thinking there might be a difference between record and album?
Well, I mean, obviously I changed it. So, yeah, I did think there would be a difference. But I didn't think, like, this is so glaring that I need to, like, say, hey, I just said record, not album. I thought correcting it on the second time would be enough.
Yeah, I mean, I would have made a point to say, hey, listen, mm-hmm. like, this is a change to the question.
Yeah.
Because just repeating it again is, well, you know, we probably don't like if
yeah, you start going in on the question.
Yeah. And especially with the extra bonus questions, it's mm-hmm. like, okay, record, it's Mariah Carey, write it down. Let's figure out these things over here. And we're not really listening beyond that.
Yeah.
So, well,
I mean, not really listening. So,
well, I mean, that's not fair to say just because you're not hearing someone repeat a question.
Well, if I had made if I said, hey, by the way, I said album this time, would you have heard me because you weren't listening?
No, probably. Mm-hmm. If you said something like, I'm going to be requalifying this mm-hmm. instead of just repeating what sounds like the same exact question,
yeah.
you know.
Well, you know what? I'm going to make good with the Wet Boys on Monday. We'll work this out. But I was taken aback on my drive home thinking about, you know, how big of a difference just one word can make, mm-hmm. you know, when phrasing a question. And truthfully, you could never be too vigilant when it comes to writing your questions and making sure they're worded properly, because this is an instance where it made a huge difference in who won. There was cash gift cards being given out mm-hmm. based on basically a misinterpretation of this one question that comes down to a word.
Right.
So quizmasters, double check, triple check even. And everybody makes mistakes, even yours truly.
And me.
So, anyways, apologies to you and the Wet Boys for that. We'll talk more about it.
Apology accepted.
Thank you. All right. Your final question. I've actually, I've tailor written this for you. I'm going to give you a question you're going to get right away first. Your real question is coming as an immediate follow-up question. Okay?
Okay.
All right. This is an internet question. Launched in 2002... what satirical website purported to be written by a 13-year-old boy whose hyperbolic adoration and three facts about ninjas became a meme, with copycat sites popping up dedicated to various topics such as Star Trek Borgs, animated music videos, lesbians, hobbits, orcs, ponies, Scientology, mimes, Microsoft Steve Ballmer, whistle tips, riboflavin, progressive rock group Dream Theater, lemmings, sloths, David Icke, black cocks, that would be chickens, and perhaps most famously, a page dedicated to pirates, setting off a ninjas versus pirates meme war that would last for years. What website is this?
I have no idea.
Are you fucking kidding me? Are you freaking kidding me? You don't know this? What website? A satirical website launched in 2002. About ninjas.
Satirical website about ninjas.
You know, we said it earlier. You think you know someone.
I know.
You think you know someone. There's no way you're getting the follow-up question. You don't remember this. I was like,
satirical maybe website.
This will be the main question. This is a internet memes question. Sub-subcategory.
Subcategory Earth. Sub-subcategory. Satirical
also,
website.
Apologies to Eric Fro, if you're listening. I know I'm saying ninjas. I'm using the parlance of the website, not the proper plural ninja.
Yes, absolutely. He'd be wincing every time he heard you say it.
Yeah.
What satire website?
I was kind of looking for you to know this, so the people listening that are like, what the fuck is he talking about, would be like, well, I guess they both know it.
Can you give me
but
a hint?
But once again, you're leaving me hanging out to dry. You want another hint?
Yeah.
It had a MIDI soundtrack of the number one solo artist. I don't even think we revealed that answer. It was Jay-Z. Has 13 number one solo albums. There was a MIDI track of his song Big Pimpin' playing as the music on this webpage that was launched in 2002.
I don't know.
RealUltimatePower.net.
Oh, my God. You know, I think I even have the Real Ultimate Power book, too.
You motherfucker.
It's been, but it's, man, that my fucking, Jesus Christ, it's been so long. It's been so long since I've heard that name.
Yeah, yep. I thought, I don't know why, I just thought that would, you'd be able to pull that back up. That is like an early internet meme. I think that's like pre-YouTube, even.
What were the three facts?
Ninjas, oh, man. Let's see if I can remember them. Ninjas are mammals. The something, and then the sole purpose of a ninja is to flip out and kill people.
Okay, yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
I can't remember what the second one is, though. The follow-up question that I had, which I guess you're not going to get if you barely remember Real Ultimate Power, was what was the pseudonym used by the writer on RealUltimatePower.net when creating the notable website? Do you remember who what the writer name was? 13-year-old?
No.
Robert Hamburger.
Oh. Yes, yes, this book is awesome. My name is Robert, and I can't stop thinking about ninjas. These guys are cool, and by cool, I mean totally sweet. Robert Hamburger. The book is only $19.85 on Amazon.com if you
that
want to relive
it. That seems expensive.
Yeah, it's $20.
I thought that would be down to $3.99.
Used and new from $4.97.
That
That's
sounds
more like it.
More like it, yeah.
Perfect.
All right, that concludes this episode of the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast. My name is Lee Breschneider. You can catch me hosting No Nonsense Trivia Live on Mondays at Three Pepper Burrito Company in downtown Fort Myers at 7:30. Then again on Wednesdays at Bury Me Brewing, also in Fort Myers. That one's starting at 7. And each and every Thursday evening at the Number 3 Craft Brews and Beer Bar in downtown Cape Coral. That show's starting at 7:30. Mr. Mark Davis, please tell our listeners where they can find you on Wednesday nights.
Well, let me tell you, boys and girls, if you're just lounging around the house on a Wednesday night and you don't know what to do and you don't want to go all the way down to Fort Myers to see the ding-dong doing trivia down there, why don't you go ahead and hop in the old pickup truck or the RV and come on down to Nice Guys Pints and Pies from 9 o'clock till 10:30. I'm going to ask you questions, going to set your pants on fire and make you shit your brains out.
Ooh, uncle! Thanks for listening. Hope you had fun. Join us every Monday morning for a new episode by subscribing to the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast on your favorite podcast platform. You can support the No-No on Patreon by visiting our website, thenono.com, and clicking on the support link at the top, which will take you to our Patreon page. You can also write us at nononsensetrivia@gmail.com, and please follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at No Nonsense Trivia, and on Twitter at No Non Trivia. And finally, don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes and Stitcher. We love those. Five stars only, please. Until next time, no-nonsense listeners, keep looking out for those chickens, of course.